Hello and welcome to Insurance Talk. My name is Cherie Martinen, and today in the studio I have Rex Lesueur. We are the father-daughter team from Bancorp Insurance, located in beautiful Lapine, Oregon. And today we are talking about what kind of insurance protects against employee theft.
Well, I think we need to be real specific in when we get started talking about this. This particular conversation is going to be about theft of money. Okay, not necessarily theft of merchandise or your
vehicles
or anything else that can and does happen. But
there's different coverage for that. But right now we're just talking money pinched from the cash register.
Cash register or the bookkeeper.
Who gets an extra paycheck every month.
Right. It creates a mystery employee.
Like an extra invoice.
Or something like that.
Yeah. That company that you're not really sure what you're paying them for.
Yeah. There's that going on. So back in the day, okay. This actually is before even I got in the business in 1979.
Whisper it.
We're going to whisper 1979.
So this is way back in the day.
Way back in the day.
We didn't get mad when people stole. No, I'm just kidding.
No, we did.
We did.
And most of the time back then, what the vehicle or the product that was available to people who were worried that their employee might be ripping them off and, you know, stealing from them, was for people to get what's called a fidelity bond. Fidelity bond is basically, and the employee, lots of times the employee had to go get this on their own and provide this to their employer if they were in a key position. Sometimes the employer would buy a blanket fidelity coverage that would cover all of their employees, or sometimes just the positions that they wanted to cover. Say they wanted to cover their bookkeeper and the maybe one or two other key employees who had access to money. And these were problematic because, like, if you had to buy it yourself, I mean, the people didn't want to go out and spend money to get a job. And then there would be, if we're covering a position, then if somebody who didn't have that position was sneaking into the bookkeeper's cubicle at night and stealing, then that was no coverage. There was no blanket to it. And then if there were named positions or like an individual, so let's say you fired your bookkeeper and you got a new one, you had to remember to call your fidelity, your agent, and tell them that Joe is no longer with us and that now we have Mary who is going to be the bookkeeper. And of course, if Mary steals from you and you haven't changed that, well, Joe was the guy that was covering Mary's not, you're out of luck. So what has happened is we've gone to a product that's, one more thing, on a fidelity bond, there was a conviction clause, which means that
they had to be convicted of theft
before they paid.
Man, that's a lot of work.
There's a lot of work to it.
So I could see why this product is different now.
And that was written by a surety company, and a surety company is technically not an insurance company. It's a surety company. And we're not going to go into the difference right now because you're already rolling your eyes at me as I talk about this.
I mean, you can. We're going back.
We're not going into that.
We'll do another podcast.
Yeah, we'll do another podcast on the difference between a surety company and an insurance company. So what started happening is this insurance company started offering a product called crime insurance. And crime insurance was basically a policy that covered the individuals that worked for a company, usually on a blanket basis, and would indemnify the owner of the company in the event that someone got into the books. These are typically now they're quite broad. Not only do they cover just the employee, but they also cover computer crime and other coverages. Even money and securities that might be in the actual physical money and securities if somebody were to break into the building and take cash out of the safe or what have you.
Like if you had the tills in the safe and then they broke in and took...
That can also be covered on this crime policy that we're talking about. Crime policies they do not have a conviction clause. Now, why is that important? And I've been through this. If you go to the, let's say we're in Deschutes County. If you go to the the district attorney, and you present evidence to the district attorney that you've been ripped off by an employee, and let's just say it's 20 grand. The district attorney is going to look at you and say, you know, you should have known better. We're not going to waste the state's resource or the county's resources on trying to convict this person, because as soon as that person gets into court and you arrest them, their immediate defense is, well, you said I could have the money. And, you know, then it becomes a he said, she said. It gets really tough in a trial. And unless that person is willing to bring themselves to court and confess everything and, you know, throw themselves on their letter opener, there's almost no way to get a conviction. So getting rid of the conviction clause is an important part of it. One of the things that with public entities like special districts and cities.
I actually think this one is even more popular with like the nonprofits and the public entities, which is kind of sad. Because like those are the places that people are sometimes giving their time more than getting paid.
Right. And I, even in our little town here, every couple of years, you know, you hear about some nonprofit, you know, where someone has misappropriated the funds.
And that's, you know, that's sad.
It is truly sad. I mean, you know,
like we all think it's like kind of maybe somebody doing the till at like a large organization, but I think a lot of times it ends up being those public entities. And those nonprofits.
And people can get really sneaky, and sometimes they never get caught. There was a case here where there was a business, and the guy that was handling the money would be paying the bills. So, and this was a long time ago, back when those of you who remember, you used to get with your check statement copy of all the actual physical check that you would get, or a copy thereof.
I mean, you can still go online and see all of the checks. Yeah.
Well, that kind of situation would have killed this problem. But what the guy did is he would take a photocopy of the check, blank, put it in his drawer, write a check to his own investment account with like one of the investment companies, like, you know, Charles Schwab or something like that.
Yeah, this is for his retirement.
It's retirement.
Yeah.
And then when the check came back from the bank, he would take the check out of the drawer, fill it out as if it was he had paid a bill, like to the people they were buying gas from, or a supplier or something,
and buying paper from or something.
And put that check back into the stack, so that if an auditor ever came around, it would be clear that that check had gone to somebody appropriate. And how they caught him was, I'm not even sure, but the guy had gotten into the company for almost $500,000, and he spent time in jail for that.
I was like, and his retirement account was stacked.
Well, when they got there, of course, consider that it was. It was available. They did get most of the money back, but the person went to jail. And
you know, you hear about this a lot in insurance, actually, in our own industry. I've heard multiple agency owners find someone goes on vacation and then suddenly things are different.
Yes.
Especially with those bookkeepers.
Those bookkeepers. Well, that is why bankers, people in positions of authority with banks, can't take any more than a 2-week vacation.
You mean they
have to take a 2-week vacation every year.
Yeah, they have mandatory 2-week vacations so they can see if there was anything fishy going on.
And so you have to be away from the bank. One of the things that we do with nonprofits, and especially nonprofits like special districts and other people that report to the government, we add a clause onto the policy, which is called the faithful performance clause. The faithful performance clause basically changes the crime coverage to mirror a bond coverage to as closely as you possibly could. So, because a lot of laws right now do not allow, government laws say that the recorder at a city or the city manager has to be bonded. And so by putting the faithful performance clause into it, that satisfies the state of Oregon for the bonding. If we didn't have that, then they'd still have to buy a bond. So that's one of the things to do. If you don't have crime coverage, well,
call us.
And I'm going to give you a really great piece of advice right now. If you don't have crime coverage and someone rips you off and you're just, you know, you can never get the money back from them because they've moved or they...
They bought a house with it.
If they bought a house, you can force them to sell the house.
Yeah.
But if they stole a lot of money from you and you know you're not getting back, all you got to do is give them a 1099.
And for the amount that's stolen?
For the amount that's
stolen. So that they can pay taxes?
So they can pay taxes on it.
And I know this is a really popular topic. This is completely separate, but we have a really popular blog called Double Signature on Checks.
Right.
And I know that sounds super simple. And checks, you might be saying, that's old school. Who writes a check anymore? And you're absolutely right. But they have this now in the digital world as well. You can have double signatures through bank ACHs through your bank.
Mm-hmm.
So like a bookkeeper can initiate the payments and then you can go back through and say, do I want to have these payments go through? There needs to be a second signature.
Right.
Or if you were old school and you have paper checks, you can have two signatures on the paper checks.
Be careful with that right now. You really do. A lot of banks, and I know our bank, I'm not going to name the name, does not actually look at signatures anymore.
It's still a nice check and balance, at least internally.
Internally. Internally, it is do not count on it to catch fraud because it's an internal thing. The best thing you can do, though, is...
But it kind of means that you'd have to have two people ripping you off.
Okay, here's one thing that you can do is make sure that the person who is writing the checks and handling the money is not the person who's reconciling the checking account. So if you have chief financial officer or just Joe who, you know, is the person who does the deposits and putting the money in the bank, then you should have a second person who is reconciling the checking account that's going out, and then someone is watching them. So there's a minimum of two eyes on every financial transaction.
And that should help lower your employee theft and crime as well.
Yeah, it will. And buy the insurance anyway, because people can be sneaky. And they might just be, if you're a firm with 150, 200 people and you got one person that's doing the payroll and, you know, and so on, and that person also handles all of the personnel and everything else, well, their cousin Joe, who doesn't exist, could very possibly be on the payroll. So you need to make sure that, that someone's watching. And if that's when it can get bad, that if there's not a minimum of two sets of eyes on all the financial transactions in your business or your nonprofit, then there's the potential for having a lot of problems. Buy the insurance. It's actually not that expensive.
Yeah, this is an easy coverage to get.
It's not that expensive because
it doesn't happen at all the time.
But
when it does.
We have a claim at least once a year. With all of our risk.
And I think what we hear too is a lot of times it might start small. Mm-hmm. It might be like, well, I was like in a real pinch and I just like needed to pay that electrical bill this month.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I started maybe skimming off the organization.
And I'll pay it back.
I'll pay it back. Yeah. And it starts with like, you know, good intentions and very small amounts.
Mm-hmm.
And over time can grow out of control. So even though it might start with maybe $50,
mm-hmm.
it ends. What did you guys, you said that guy had 500,000?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it can get big fast. And so just be real aware that, you know, trust your employees, but verify. Just look and make sure that what's going on and check the numbers or have somebody else check the numbers. If we're a public entity, then an audit every once in a while is good. But people can sneak things around and audit.
Yep. All right. If that didn't scare you to buy crime insurance, I don't know what will. come to www.vancorpinsurance.com or call us at 541-536-1726 to purchase crime insurance. And thanks for joining us on Insurance Talk.
Produced by Carver Sound Productions. For more information on podcast production services, visit carversoundproductions.com.